returning for Monday, August 20th, W17006 through 014, continuing with the appellant's case. Are there procedural items that we need to address before we get started?
We had arranged to have Gordon Lagerquist, Toby Thaler, Fremont Neighbor Council. We had arranged for Gordon Lagerquist to testify by means of declaration, and the deadline that we agreed on was August 9th, and it was hopefully received by council for the city before 5 o'clock on August 9th, and I have a copy here for the hearing examiner.
Okay.
And I'm not sure how you want to proceed in terms of designating it as an exhibit or how that works.
We'll just mark it as an exhibit along with the others. We are on 239. Any objections?
No.
Right. Exhibit 239 is admitted.
And then there's the logistics. If the city wishes to cross-examine Mr. Lagerquist, he would be available after he returns from Northeast United States at the end of the week or August 30-31.
So, Mr. Cameron, Todd Escasalias on behalf of the city. Our understanding is Mr. Lagerquist is not being offered as an expert witness, rather it's fact testimony.
Correct.
And with that in mind, we've reviewed the declaration and we don't need to cross-examine Mr. Lagerquist.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anything else we need to address procedurally?
The city attorneys wanted to, apparently, in the paper shuffle, Exhibit 217 did not get in their hands, and I just reviewed what that exhibit is with co-counsel, and I will be able to provide a copy of that tomorrow.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else?
Not for me.
All right. Just a short note for the parties. I'm happy to make the hearing examiner room available for you to collect your materials here, but we've had a few people trying to come into the hearing examiner staff-only area and to gather my cart to put things on it, so just make sure whoever is coming knows that this is the record, and I don't necessarily want documents up here unless you have handed them to me during the hearing, so just make a note. It's been individuals on both sides, so it's not a big deal, but I just wanted to, if we could highlight that for them, that'd be helpful. And with that, well, we'll get started with the appellants.
Good morning, Your Honor. The Friends of North Rainier call Michael James.
Please state your name and spell it for the record.
Yes, my name is Michael James, MichaelJames.
And do you swear or affirm that the testimony you'll provide in today's hearing will be the truth?
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. James.
Good morning.
What is your current occupation?
So I am a urban planner working for the City of Phoenix, and I'm the Bus Rapid Transit Administrator.
And how long have you had that position?
I've had that position for 16 months.
I understand that prior to your move to Arizona, you spent some time in the state of Washington?
Yes, I did.
And what was your, how long had you resided in Washington?
Yeah, so I moved back to Washington State to work for the Seattle Department of Transportation. And I worked for SDOT from August of 2012 to May of 2017. Okay. And in that role, I was a strategic advisor and project manager for several projects, one being the accessible Mount Baker project, which was located in the Mount Baker neighborhood, as well as participated on an interdepartmental team with the Office of Planning and Community Development, Housing, Economic Development, where we focused on transit-oriented development and equitable development. Primarily in the Rainier Valley, so looking at the light rail stations in the Rainier Valley. So that was something that I was a part of working with OPCD during that time as well.
And today you're going to be discussing open space planning and resources in the North Rainier Urban Village, correct?
That's correct.
And before we get into that, can you outline your educational background?
Yeah, so I have a Bachelor of Science in Landscape Architecture from Washington State University, where I did quite a bit of work on open space parks planning, as well as focusing my senior project on connectivity of bikeways in urban and city settings. I also have a Master's of Urban and Regional Planning from Eastern Washington University, where I studied all aspects of urban planning, from transportation, land use, open space, etc.
Do you have any accreditations or certificates related to this planning background?
Yeah, I sure do. I'm accredited from the American Institute of Certified Planners, otherwise known as AICP, and I was my certification was granted in July of 1998, so just over 20 years ago.
Do you have personal knowledge of the open space planning efforts in the North Rainier Urban Village as it relates to the upzone area?
Yeah, absolutely. That was an integral part of the TOD interdisciplinary team, as well as my work on the Accessible Mount Baker specific project that I worked on basically from 2014 through 2016.
So how did the city first ask you to get involved in issues related to the North Rainier Urban Village?
So one of the first things that I did is knowing that I was going to be working on this specific Accessible Mount Baker plan in 2014, through the interdisciplinary team, I started attending the community hearings for the neighborhood upzone that previously happened. I was particularly interested to see what were the community issues with that upzone. Were people supportive or were they not supportive? How did they look at the changes that were coming to the neighborhood? How was the neighborhood going to look at increased either density or employment intensities? How was it going to look at open space, since we've known and talked about this being one of Seattle's worst open space gaps as part of this neighborhood? Just really wanted to get a good understanding of how the community felt on those issues and what was being said at those hearings.
So that initial, engagement with the community hearing process on that first upzone, what did you learn about open space conditions within the area?
So I'm going to interpose an objection just at the outset here. And it's trying to understand the rules of the road here. Mr. James was not disclosed as an expert witness. He was disclosed as a fact witness only. I understand there's broader latitude in the examiner context, but we're put in kind of an odd position here because given the extensive testimony about his background and his expertise, it's going to be hard unless Mr. James stays solely within a factual context rather than opining or giving any sort of testimony about the subject matter of his expertise. We're in a bit of a bind because we weren't given the opportunity to take his deposition. We didn't take it because he was only a fact witness.
But, Your Honor, he is testifying from his personal knowledge, being directly involved on behalf of the city as a city employee, which they were fully aware of his role as the project manager in this area. And he will be speaking from his personal knowledge on the open space issues. If there's any concern about the fact that he speaks from a position of knowledge, that goes to the weight of his testimony and shouldn't be some basis for excluding him from talking about his direct personal participation in the open space park plan that is at issue in this case.
I guess the concern, though, is I don't have recollection of what's in the exhibit, so exhibit and witness disclosures, but certainly sitting here and listening to this witness introduce himself and indicate that he's got a landscape architecture degree and then a master urban regional planning degree, that's not personal experience, that's education. That's could well bleed into the concern raised by the city. I don't know what you're having him testify about, whether it's related to or based upon that, but I think the concern's being raised with more than just personal experience.
Sure.
So can you elucidate on that? Are we going into that area, or how do you plan to approach that with this witness?
Well, first of all, with regard to background, it's a common courtesy, as you know, when people are called to give a little background.
Sure.
And so that was relevant to that.
Certainly. And we have had fact witnesses here who have extraordinary resumes, and that's certainly part of the picture. But when do we cross the line from that resume to what they're testifying about is what we need to know more.
We will keep him directly tied, as I believe we have, to his direct involvement in the in our neighborhood's open space planning process. He's not like an expert who is being provided a bunch of paperwork to opine, give opinions. We will be asking him questions about his direct role with regard to the open space resource issue and his direct familiarity with that before this appeal was even filed.
May I respond?
Yes.
I think this goes to the nature of what it means to be an expert. There's a difference between what Mr. James has gone out and done on his personal, just on his own and his personal observations. When he gets into the role that he played as a planner with his expertise on the work that he did in that capacity, it exceeds what he's done on his personal knowledge. It goes into the scope of what he has done as an expert that was hired.
We're not calling him as an expert, Your Honor, as a fact witness.
The conundrum I'm in, though, is that you may be calling him as a fact witness, but I guess I'm not sure, and you haven't clearly delineated for me where that line is between his educational background and professional background, which is normally the basis for expertise to support the facts that are being introduced. And it's going to be a fine line for me to divide that now that we've laid that as the foundation for the testimony that's going to be introduced. And so if you're not crossing that line, and you can make it very clear to me that, you know, he's talking about the fact that he takes his kids out there and however you want to do that, that's fine. But if we're talking about studies he's analyzed and could possibly have crossed the line with information he got from his education and from his professional background, then we're talking about an expert. And so the issue becomes then an issue really of disclosure. Whether the city had an opportunity to prepare for that. It's not a question of, you certainly can call experts. We've been doing that all along for weeks. But the question then is whether the city had a genuine opportunity for understanding and knowing what the basis of the testimony would be today.
But just briefly, I will keep my questions narrowly focused on his direct personal participation in these processes. And as far as the issue of notice, city is, of course, fully aware of his role in being directly involved in those processes, and I will do my best to stay away from opinions and keep it focused on his approach in those processes. Because again, I think the whole point here is that the open space section of this EIS does not make our position is. Is inadequate in addressing the open space issues that the city itself had had sought to address. So the way that we have prepared to present that information is through the city's own individual who is directly participating in those open space efforts. And it's based on his personal knowledge and participation. I think that is information that would be very important for the hearing examiner to have before it. And to the extent that there are mixed questions of fact or an opinion, we can, maybe we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But again, I do believe he is in a position to testify based on personal knowledge.
So, I agree. I guess we'll have to cross that bridge when it comes. Noting the city's objection now, I can't rule this witness out because there is a path that the appellants could weave through this witness's testimony that would simply be fact-based and not touching on that experience. If you stray from that fine line that we're on essentially at this point, then the city may raise an additional objection at that time on that specific point. But I also recognize that a general objection has been raised to this witness, and we may also have to pick this up again at the end of the testimony to see if there's an issue with regard to calling him back or something along those lines for the city to have an opportunity.
Thank you.
Okay, so I think where we left off, Mr. James, is you were talking about your attendance at the community meetings and what you learned at that point about the issues of open space within the community.
Yes.
And I think you mentioned it is identified as the worst open space gap in the area.
Yeah, there was really three concerns that I heard that really stuck in my mind. One was the open space gap concerns, as you just mentioned. The other two were relating to the upzone is what kind of uses were going to be happening in this community. Was it going to be employment uses, or was it going to be upscale housing? And then there was some concern with does that bring displacement, et cetera. So those were the three big issues.
And you mentioned you were getting involved because of your role as the project manager for Accessible Mount Baker.
Right.
And that was you were working for the city in that capacity, correct?
That is correct.
And what is Accessible Mount Baker?
So the city identified $800,000 to study access, safety, and transportation improvements around the Mount Baker Station area. I think it's long been known and acknowledged it's kind of one of the worst planned multimodal stations, probably, I would say, in the West Coast. And
I'm going to object again, Mr. Examiner. This is getting square.
We'll keep it focused on, okay. On your role here. Yeah.
Yeah, so the role was to identify a plan for safety improvements, multimodal improvements, increasing transit efficiency, connecting open spaces with pedestrian facilities, generally making it safer for the entire station area and the kids going back and forth from Franklin.
And so as the city employee who was responsible for Accessible Mount Baker, were you called upon to consider the comprehensive plan?
Yeah, absolutely. So
what role did the comprehensive plan play in your work on the Accessible Mount Baker project?
So the comprehensive plan is basically the foundation or the blueprint for giving us direction on what we need to consider in establishing and setting up this planning effort. So,
Mr. Examiner, I'm sorry. I have to object again. Excuse me just for a second. This is precisely the concern that we're heading right into it. So I understand that Mr. James can testify from personal knowledge about certain things, but as soon as he starts talking about work he did of a technical nature, even if employed by the city, that is precisely the scope of an expert witness. And I don't know how this is even going to stay clear of that line. We're talking about studies he's done, analysis he's done as a planner. And that was not disclosed. We would have taken a very different approach had he been listed as an expert witness. He was actually withdrawn, as I recall.
Your Honor, this is no different than the context when a treating provider is called.
I'm sorry, a what provider?
In a personal injury matter, mm-hmm. You have this distinction between lay witnesses who happen to be expert doctors who actually laid hands on a patient, and then expert witnesses who are subject to the expert disclosures. This individual is here. There's no problem with notice because the city was fully aware, more than we, on terms of the scope of his responsibilities on this project. And he's here to testify about his direct involvement and his guiding, what guided him in terms of the open space and North Rainier Town Center plan that it has no mention in the EIS. And so getting it, I mean, it may be difficult for him not to speak on issues such as comprehensive plans, but those were the tools of his trade as an individual who's directly involved. We didn't prepare him as an expert. This is based on his personal knowledge.
I think we need to give Mr. James a little more guidance than he's gotten on this, because it sounds to me like he also wasn't necessarily prepared just as a fact witness. We've already stumbled into one area where he's given testimony about his expertise, and we're only a couple questions in, really, on the substance of this witness. So, Mr. James, you need to understand that your testimony is being truncated, essentially. What you can testify to, I should say. You come to us as both an expert and someone who has actually experienced certain aspects of a planning project. The bounds of that are limited to what you have actually experienced. we have individuals coming into the hearing room testifying that their participation of various meetings, public meetings, tracking comprehensive plan revisions, and the EIS comment periods, and they're all testifying as fact witnesses. So I think we can allow someone with a planning background to do the same. It's really steering clear of what may appear to you to be objective or even subjective opinions on that process. The substance of the EIS, for example, is not, you know, I don't necessarily want to hear from this witness whether the EIS adequately covered something or not. That's probably his expert opinion. So what is his experience with it is what we really need to limit it to. Do you need time to talk to this witness to help prepare for that so we don't stumble along too many more of these types of questions?
I'd
rather take 5 minutes now to make sure that he understands it and you've had a chance to talk to him about it than us doing this for every other question that we approach him with.
Sure.
So let's take a five-minute break and coach the witness essentially on the boundaries that we're in here, and we'll come back.
All right. Thank you.